Hi there. I'm so excited to welcome you to the Arthritis Life podcast, where we share arthritis life stories and tips for thriving with autoimmune arthritis. My name is Cheryl Crow, and I am passionate about helping people navigate real life with arthritis beyond joint pain. I've been living with rheumatoid arthritis for 20 years, and I'm also a mom, occupational therapist, video creator, support group leader, and I created the Room to Thrive self-management program. I am so excited to help you live a more empowered life with arthritis. We're going to cover everything from kitchen life hacks to navigating the healthcare system to coping with friends who just don't get it. Seriously, no topic is going to be off limits on this podcast. My interviewees and I share our honest stories of how chronic illness affects our lives. This includes discussions about mental health, sex, shame, pregnancy, body image, advocacy, self-acceptance, and so much more. You'll hear stories from all ends of the spectrum, from a person who's living in Medicaid remission from psoriatic arthritis to somebody living with severe mobility restrictions and severe pain from rheumatoid arthritis. You'll hear how people manage their conditions in different ways, like medications, mindfulness, movement, social support, work accommodations, and so much more. You'll also hear from rheumatology experts who just get it. We'll dive deep into the science behind chronic pain and what's the latest evidence for lifestyle changes that can help you thrive with arthritis, including exercise, sleep, nutrition, stress reduction, and more. This is your chance to sit down and chat with a friend who's been there. Ready to figure out how to manage your arthritis life? Let's get started. I'm so excited today to have Ray Bouchard on the Arthritis Life podcast. We always, I'm trying to get representation of different voices, and I've had a lot of women on the podcast and I've had a handful of men, but I'm excited to have you today to represent, you know, all of your unique experiences. And to get started, can you just let the audience know, where do you live and what is your relationship to arthritis?
So, hi, everybody. So I live in Venice, Florida. I moved to Venice 20 years ago. And I have ankylosing spondylitis, I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I have osteoarthritis. And those are my relationships, I guess, to arthritis.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to talk more about, yeah, that it's, you can interpret that question many different ways. Someone once said, it's complicated. I have a complicated relationship to my arthritis, but thank you for sharing. And I'm sorry that you have, you know, they say that arthritis and autoimmune diseases don't like to travel alone. So if you have one, you're more likely to have multiple. So, unfortunately, you are an example of that, but I would love to know a little bit about your diagnosis story, you know, which one came first and how did you figure out what it was? Because that can be a long journey.
Could be. I think, so the first thing I remember, I think I was 34 years old and I had really bad back pain, hip pain, things like that. And I remember a doctor saying, and I didn't remember the word until years later because I didn't pay attention to it. He said I had ankylosing spondylitis. And he said I would be a crippled old man. And I just went on my way. And so that was, I went a long time untreated until I was in my, I think, 65, injured my knee, and they had to replace the knee, and it was a sporting injury, so they replaced the knee, and 6 months after that, my autoimmune system just went nuts, and it was the first time that I had an experience with rheumatoid arthritis, so... Wow. I'm in my seventh year now.
So when you were 34, was that a rheumatologist that diagnosed you with ankylosing spondylitis, or was it just primary care?
It was my primary care, and then later after that, it was an orthopedic doctor that had said that was the ankylosing spondylitis. He was actually did some surgeries on my lumbar area. And after looking at things and seeing how things were looking, he said it looked like I had ankylosing spondylitis. And I didn't do anything. It's not his fault. I was 34.
Yeah. And so did it, I'm fascinated by this, Sid, in the sense that I'm curious if you had symptoms, like, were you symptomatic for those 30 more years until you injured your knee? Was your back, were you just living with back pain uncontrolled?
Yeah, I lived with horrible back pain. Yeah. Oh, and I worked very hard. Opioids, steroids, lots of stuff to keep going.
Wow. So, and can you tell the audience what you did for work or do for work?
So I was a first responder. The beginning part of my career, I started out in the fire service, and about 17 years in, I left and went to the American Red Cross, and I worked at the American Red Cross for 11 years. And I worked in the disaster relief department and traveled all over the country to major disasters and things like that. And after I left the Red Cross, I went to work as a contractor for Allstate. And I finished my career, in hurricanes. That's where I worked. Wow. Hurricanes, one after another, after another.
I guess you're in the right place in Florida for that work.
That's how I wound up here, I think. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And I'm just imagining how physical your job, was, or your jobs were, and how much pain you were living through. And then, so how did you injure yourself when you were 65? Now I'm curious. Sorry.
So at 65, I was training for a Spartan race. Is a 12-mile. It's crazy for a 65-year-old person to do that. But I did it, and I came over an 8-foot wall, and I didn't lower myself. I just went over the wall, and when I hit the ground, it just went the other way.
Oh, my gosh. So a Spartan race is kind of like an obstacle course. Is that right? Kind of like those army training obstacle course where you go up, you climb up the rope, and
run through the mud.
I'm always nervous when I watch those on TV or like American Ninja Warrior. I know that's different, but I'm always like, don't get hurt. So after your knee replacement at 65, then you developed you already had a diagnosis of AS, which is like autoinflammatory. And then after this, the surgery, you developed more like rheumatoid arthritis along with,
I had rheumatoid arthritis. And I didn't believe the diagnosis. I went all the way to the Cleveland Clinic and had them do all the stuff. And it's seronegative, so it's, always hard for me to kind of get my arms around that. Nothing ever says I have RA except doctors, but I trust.
Yeah. They call it like a diagnosis of exclusion because there's no one definitive test. It's not like diabetes where like, if your blood sugar levels are above your fasting blood sugar is above a certain amount, you have it. With rheumatoid arthritis, it's like also call it like a clinical diagnosis where they look at the pattern of your pain. Was it in your distal joints, like your fingers and toes? That's more likely to be RA than straight up, ankylosing spondylitis and stuff like that. But it's very common to be confused about your diagnosis, especially if you don't have that positive rheumatoid factor, because it feels like that rheumatoid factor is like, makes it just makes sense that would be because it has the word rheumatoid in it. But people can actually have a positive rheumatoid factor and not have RA. So it's very, welcome to autoimmunity. Just
here I am.
Confusing and overwhelming. What are the, you mentioned that prior to the knee replacement, you were doing opioids and steroids for your back pain. What are some of the treatments? What's been working well with your treatment plan recently?
So my treatment plan, it really hasn't been working well. I've gone through a lot of recently was on a biosimilar, Avsola, and I was on that for a year, 9 months, and then they switched me off to Remicade, which Avsola is a biosimilar. So, and I never got, and I just never got what I felt was good enough bang for the buck. I don't want to put it that way, but there were things that still weren't right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I was on the methotrexate, and I stayed, you know, faithfully on my methotrexate and did that. And still, I just felt that the treatments were like not working. Hmm. So
you're still kind of in that trial and error, maybe we could say, of figuring out what's going to work.
I think I want to switch to Skyrizi, which is a different, hits a different area in the immune system. It's not a JAK inhibitor. It's an IL-23. I should know these things, but yeah.
There's so many acronyms. And I know that, Remicade is a TNF inhibitor, tumor necrosis factor inhibitor. And it is true that when you don't respond well to one class of medicine, you know, then you try a different one. So that is kind of a progression that's typical to go through if you're not fortunate enough for the first one to work. I didn't realize how lucky I was when my first medicine I tried worked really well for me for 6 years. I thought that's what happened to everyone, you know, but unfortunately it's not that simple sometimes. So it's just you've been having to manage a lot along with osteoarthritis. And where is your osteoarthritis currently?
So I've had my left knee's been replaced, and the reason it went out was osteoarthritis.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they replaced that. My left hip has been replaced. My right hip will be replaced after my run next week. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's in my knee. I know it's in my knee. It's in my wrists. Places that I used a lot.
But you're still so active, which is so, it's an interesting, like, I'm guessing to some people listening, it's like, oh, wow, you can still be active even with arthritis in so many joints. Are you in a lot? Do you find that exercise helps your arthritis?
It helps. It also can hurt. You have to be careful. It's not the exercise, it's the person that's making the person do the exercise that shouldn't be doing it. So I know things I shouldn't do.
I see.
But I do them, you know.
Welcome to being a human. That's okay. We are all like that. So don't beat yourself up too much, you know?
It's a battle. It's just I want to hold on. I don't want to lose things. And arthritis takes things away. And on top of that, I have age coming in there too. So there's two things that are really like pulling on my abilities. And it's not like I had a car crash, you know, and my back is broke. I'm a paraplegic now.
Right.
It's a little like a steady decline.
I know what you mean. It reminds me of that old story of like you put the frog in boiling water and it jumps out, but if you put the frog in warm water and then you slowly, and I know that's not actually what that story is supposed to mean, but it's like actually a better analogy would be like the death by a thousand cuts, you know, where you're just having all these little losses that you're grieving.
It's just one after another. I have to have a piece of skin cancer removed.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's not a big deal. I can't go in the water for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I live in the water. I can't do that for 2 weeks now.
Yeah. It's so much to manage. That's why people say having chronic illness is like a full-time job, you know?
It is. Yeah. Good thing I'm retired.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. And, you know, we touched a little bit on the, you know, grieving the things, the losses of being, maybe in your case, having been so active, even despite your AS diagnosis, being so active, even, you know, from a younger age. You know, I'm curious about, you know, in general, what has helped you cope with the losses, with the ups and downs, you know, I know there's no secret to coping, but it's always nice to hear what's helped other people.
I'd like to say I cope well.
Great.
I hide it really well. I don't cope well at all. It's, but I cope by, I get up every day. I show up, I do the best I can every day. And that is, I guess, what helps me get through. I just know that I'm doing the best I can today. And if it's on a couch, that's okay. I know that's the best I can do today.
I mean, I love that. What I hear in that is a little, like, I have some mantras that I repeat to myself. Like, one of them is like, we can do hard things, because I'm very social. Mm-hmm. So I like to feel like I'm part of something bigger, not just I can do hard things, but we,
yep,
as humans. And, you know, I'm doing the best I can is a great mantra, you know, but you feel like you're not coping well. It sounds like, I want to validate that. Yeah.
Correct. My mental health is not well.
Is not what? Sorry.
It's not well. No.
I mean, what? Yeah, it's hard to know what is. Like, is any human in a perfect state of mental wellness? I don't know. You know?
Yeah. It's just a piece to cope with. It was, I don't think it's different for a man or a woman, the loss. Mm-hmm. Okay. But my loss, I was part of a team. We traveled the country. We were together, ate, slept, lived together. And then when I got sick, they just moved on. And that was a real hard thing. And I would have done the same. I've done the same thing. Remember that people have died on my team. People have gotten sick on the team. And that's what happens. I understand it. But that was really hard to deal with. And then, you know, I kind of withdrew. It was, and at the same time, COVID hit. Mm-hmm. Nobody was coping well with anything. And I withdrew.
Right.
I haven't come out yet.
And do you have a support system?
I have my wife. She's great, you know, and I have my daughter, but I don't have a medical support system for mental health. There's just, and I'm not being, I'm using a very broad brush here.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
I don't like to do that. It's hard for old men to find mental health. We're just not interesting. Everybody thinks we're angry, and we're just not. We're in a lot of pain. We're quiet, you know, but it's just hard. I can't get a mental health appointment. I'm 3.5 hours on a phone one day. So it's hard, I guess.
Wow. No, and I just want to appreciate like your honesty, because you know this is hard to talk about, this kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, I think it's there's a big generation difference I've observed in, you know, the current the young people now, like even let's say my son who's 9 years old, we talk about mental health from a young age. They talk about it in school. They talk about bullying. They talk about, you know, mindfulness, taking a deep breath. But, and you know, I think when you grew up and to some degree, when I grew up, I'm 42, you know, it wasn't as big of a focus. It wasn't, there was more stigma against it, talking about mental health at all. I thought it was, for a long time, I didn't go to therapy because I thought it would be a weakness. You know, I'm like, no, I'm mentally strong. I don't need it. Like denial, you know? And I thought I had a weird thing where I was like, well, I have all these privileges in my life, so I shouldn't have to go to therapy because I'm like, or I don't deserve it because my life isn't that bad, you know? So that was a weird, unique thing. But yeah, but back to your story. So it sounds like you are interested in like trying therapy and getting mental health support, but it's been really, really hard to find it.
Yeah. The thing now, and I joke it's like the California psychic hotline now. That seems to be where mental health is going. Call this 800 number and let me just call someone on the phone and
Yeah, I think they're trying to actually deliver good therapy. I'm not talking about BetterHelp in general, but telehealth, they're trying to make it more accessible, trying to make therapy accessible to people, which hopefully overall would be a good thing. But yeah, it's definitely.
Maybe psychic hotlines wasn't good.
I know we grew up. Yeah. I'm obviously a different generation than you, but I remember growing up with everything was calling any sort of 1-800 number was not like a good thing. So, but yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh, how do we get on this tangent? But I think it's on the one hand, it's like you have gratitude for, it sounds like, you know, that you have your wife and you have your daughter and, but you're looking for maybe some more, you know, your family members are there for you, but they're not a substitute for like a professional that has been trained in mental health and that is only they're there for you as an objective observer, not as like someone you have a lifelong complicated relationship like with, you know. I hope there's some good therapists in Florida that you're able to hook up with. And my brain fog just took over. I was gonna ask another follow-up question. But you're saying hiding it. Do you feel like you have a pressure to like hide your pain from your family and others?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's just, you know, I tell people, I've accepted the fact that I'm a 1954 model. And I've been upgraded. This is it. This is where it's going to go. And I just don't.
You're a 1954 model. I think that's hilarious. Like talking about yourself like a car.
There are things that just. They're just there. They happened. Were put in me so young when I was so young.
Yeah.
That I just, you know, everything we did, I look back at the time was, I always joke. I mean, I was born basically to fight World War III. All the toys we were given were guns and knives. And when I was a little kid, yeah. So it's like the message that were put into us as little kids about as a man, you don't cry. You don't cry. Period. Yeah. You know, you don't even go around the corner and cry. It's a hard thing. Yeah. It's a hard life. I cry. I am the biggest blubbering baby. I stand in front of people and cry and take deep breaths. And I don't do well with that part at all.
Well, it sounds like you've given yourself permission to feel some of your feelings, at least.
I don't like that one at all.
Yeah. So you don't. You don't like to cry, but you do. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it happens. I just can't. Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's got nothing to do with RA. It's been my whole life.
Well, I mean, everything intersects though, right? So like those messages you were given as a young child that boys don't cry, got toughen up. You know, those become internalized. And then when you're living with chronic pain from RA and AS and OA, osteoarthritis, it's like you immediately have this reflex when you're feeling pain and you want to cry that, oh, I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. I'm ashamed of that. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Just, yeah.
And that it takes so much work to undo that kind of, I mean, they call it toxic masculinity in some ways. It is, well, I guess that's a broader statement, but it's like the toxic messages around what you as a man should be able to express and feel is so, it's unhelpful to everyone, you know. Oh, sorry, my dog just came in the room. I was like, who's that? And it's, you have to undo, it's like they talk about undoing your internalized ableism or challenging your internalized ableism. It's a challenge our internalized, you know, what would you call it? Yeah, challenge your internalized toxic masculinity and say, like, no, it's okay. I'm a human being. Like humans, through all of human history and all of human cultures, you know, humans cry. Like it's not a failure to cry. You know, it's not a failure to feel emotions. It's something that everyone throughout history has done. If they've, you know, it's the first thing we do when we come out of the womb is cry.
Cry. Yeah.
Now I feel kind of I'm like a crying influencer. Like everyone cry. Oh my gosh. And another thing that we kind of talked about before starting recording is on the mental health is on the mental health front is that both you and I have struggled with anxiety. And in your case, you know, I know you've had some struggles and this is just whatever you feel compelled to share about. There's no pressure, you know, but with, you know, OCD and some struggles around food, is there anything you want to, you know, share with the audience about that?
Yes. I would love to share that. And it was, I was away from home and I followed a really good group of people on Instagram. And I looked at the arthritis diets and I looked at everything and they were very great, great messages. And my head, you know, took those messages and I started to make some very small changes in my diet. Mm-hmm. And the very first one I remember was I started drinking black coffee.
Okay.
And my goal was to get rid of dairy. Mm-hmm. So I started drinking black coffee and I was working in California at the time and I was away from home. I was alone a lot. And so my head started taking over. And in the process, in a course of 3 months, I had taken all dairy, all gluten, all meat, fish, nightshades out of my diet. Mm. I pretty much mostly ate a lot of black beans and black coffee.
Oh, wow.
I'm embarrassed. But didn't think anything was wrong. I made big pots of vegetarian chili. And you know, I just didn't think anything was wrong with it at all. And a funny thing was, as I was going through the material in the room to thrive class.
Yeah.
I'd be on the spot to tell you what the word is right now. I would have to see it written in front of me.
Orthorexia.
Yes. And the one thing that stuck out to me was fear of your food hurting you. And it's like, that's what was going on. Yeah. I had gotten to the point where I needed to eat the best bean. I had to have the best vegetable. I had to have, so I excluded so much stuff from my diet. I was down to 176 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm a 6'4" person. Right now I'm at 204 pounds.
Wow.
So it got really out of hand and nobody noticed it because I was gone for so long. I didn't travel because COVID was coming out. So mm-hmm. I just stayed out on the West Coast and worked. And even though I had RA and had all that stuff going on, So that's what happened with that. So I'm happy to say, you know, I don't eat red meat, but I have chicken in my diet now. I have fish in my diet now. I actually had a piece of pork rib the other day and I didn't die.
I love pork.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking at things and my diet is doing much better.
I mean, I'm glad you're sharing to bring awareness. I'm sorry you went through this, but it is really, it's a really subtle thing for people to acknowledge is a problem. The noun of that sentence was meant to be orthorexia is something that it on the surface level looks like a healthy behavior, right? You're saying, oh, why is it bad to eat healthy? It's not bad to eat healthy, but the problem that is mentally unhealthy about it is that when you get to the point where you're so obsessed with only eating perfect, only eating clean, and fearful of food, it interferes with your ability to function in daily life, and it causes you immense stress, which if you're eating clean, quote unquote, or eating, you know, a certain diet in order to manage your inflammation, your inflammatory arthritis, and you are so stressed about every bite of food that you take, and stress is inflammatory, you're actually shooting yourself in the foot because you're just substituting one form of stress for another. You know, you're saying, okay, well, yeah, I'm getting rid of the inflammation from food, but I'm replacing that inflammation with inflammation from stress because now I'm so stressed about eating, you know? And it's a cycle a lot of people get into and they don't recognize because it doesn't look like from the outside, like you're still eating. So it's not like you're not eating. It's not like anorexia. So
big bowls. I mean,
What helped you get out of that cycle?
First realizing it. That was the very first thing, just understanding that oh my God, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And then it was just, I didn't talk to a lot of people about it. I actually wrote a piece about it.
Yeah.
And I posted it. I don't write a lot, but I posted it. Mm-hmm. And I figured if I just outed myself that I have this thing, other people are going to see it now. And at the same time, I just told my wife, listen, from now on, I have some kind of animal protein with my food. I don't care if it's a little piece of chicken, a little piece of fish, you know, whatever, but it's got to be animal protein, but no dairy. I still don't do dairy. I thought there was great benefits to no dairy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a process a lot of people, you know, with rheumatoid arthritis and other forms of inflammatory arthritis, it's a very helpful process to go through determining what are your body's triggers, right? Triggers for pain or fatigue, overall inflammation. Is it dairy? Is it gluten? You know, is it night? Some people have a difficulty with nightshades. Some people, I actually have difficulty with legumes like beans. So that would be hard for me to do a bean-based diet. Many people do great with them, you know, so it's that experimentation on your own body can be very helpful. It's just, it's when you take it too far to where you're constantly stressed about food or fearful of food, that's where it's, you know, not as helpful. And one thing I heard, I wish I remember where I read this, but that eating disorders aren't really about food. They're about control. And like, I don't know to the degree to which, you know, a psychiatrist may agree or disagree with that, but the part that resonated with me was when you have a chronic illness, there's so much out of your control. And one of the things that you do multiple times a day that's in your control is choose what to put in your body, right? Choose the food to consume. So it's it's a very natural, I would say, or to want to control your diet. So again, it's the impulse. It's like I don't know a good analogy, but the impulse is correct to say, I'm going to try to eat healthier, quote unquote. You know, that's not a bad thing. It's just, it's taken too far, you know?
Yeah.
I guess a good analogy would be like the OCD of washing your hands, which OCD is a lot more than that, but you know, washing your hands is not a bad thing. Washing your hands once is a reasonable, maybe twice. Okay. 16 times now is interfering with your life. Now it's you know, You're creating stress and you're not engaging fully in life. So,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's very, very hard for people to self-treat any eating disorder. So I'm, you know, think that, you know, you get some, I was going to say gold star. I'm always giving people gold stars because that's when I grew up in the 80s, where you get a gold star for doing everything. You know, I hope that you feel proud that you were able to recognize it. And, you know, it's hard to change your behavior.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would have recognized it if I hadn't have. I probably would have recognized that something was wrong. I probably knew something was wrong. But when I was doing, just coming across that, and that caused me to go, and the orthorexia caused me to go, let me go check what that is. And I looked at some other stuff and I'm like, oh my God, you know, so it was, yeah, that was a big part of it. Wow. It was really slow. I didn't realize what had happened.
Yeah. And I think
COVID did weird stuff to all of us, I think.
Yes. Yes. It's exactly, you know? That is so true. Yeah. It was not just the, you're not in control of your body because you have an autoimmune disease. And then now you want to seek control through food. It's also that your like your environment now suddenly is really out of your control because this COVID could be floating around anywhere and we didn't really know how it was transmitted. And so all the more reason people sought to control what they could, you know? Yeah. I'm glad. I mean, I actually had never heard about orthorexia until I was putting together the materials for the Room to Thrive, you know, course. And I thought it really resonated, and I make a point to talk about it in the course with a trigger warning, you know, of course, about eating disorders. Mm-hmm. But because it, there's, especially on social media, there's a lot of content, a lot of silos or rabbit holes you can go down or get into, where everyone is pressuring each other to, you know, eat a certain way and feeling guilty if you're not doing that. You know what I mean? Because it sounds like you heard about these diets through Instagram. Is that right?
It wasn't, and I followed really good people. I mean, on Creaky Kitchen.
Oh yeah, those are valid.
I followed things like that, and it was really good advice. But it was what my head did to the advice. Really good advice. I still follow, you know, the people that I followed. It was me. It was just where my head went with it. And it's, I think part of it is I'm an athlete. I'm goal driven. I am numbers driven. I love to see results. And I think that contributed to it. And again, I just think it was a perfect storm of things that came together.
I mean, I once had a doctor that told me, you know, my athletes are sometimes my hardest patients, because he knew that I was a soccer player in college. And I said, oh, why is that? He's like, because they've had so much practice overriding their body signals that you of pain, right? Yeah. Like to excel in athletics, most people have to push through their pain. And that's not always what you want to do if you have a chronic, you know, condition. Although to make life more complicated, you also don't want to overly listen to your pain if your pain is from like fibromyalgia or like central sensitization, where it's a misfiring of your brain or your pain, you know, signals that your tissues are actually not damaged, but your brain is interpreting pain. So it's just complicated.
Yeah. But just keep going.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, and that's,
if you have ever felt completely lost or utterly alone while trying to navigate real life with rheumatic disease, listen up. I am here for you. I created an educational program to help you go from overwhelmed to confident, supported, and connected in a matter of weeks. And it's called Room to Thrive. After earning a master's in occupational therapy and completing hundreds of hours of additional training, I created a step-by-step guide to help you truly thrive with rheumatic disease. This is the only program I know of that's designed to improve quality of life for people living with inflammatory autoimmune forms of arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, Sjogren's disease, and more. During the self-paced lessons, you'll learn how to manage pain and fatigue, cope with stress, navigate relationships, and continue doing the things that matter to you and bring you joy. The goal is really to help you improve your quality of life and learn how to thrive with your rheumatic disease right now, rather than waiting for a distant day when it might be cured or healed. I really created the down-to-earth, practical, heartfelt resource I wish I had had when I was first diagnosed at age 20. If you want even more in-depth support, you can join the 12-week Room to Thrive virtual support group, where you'll be surrounded by people who actually get what you're going through, people who will provide the encouragement, validation, and support that you deserve. Each group is expertly moderated, so you don't have to worry about the kind of misinformation that spreads like wildfire in the free-for-all social media groups. If you're on the fence, don't just take my word for it. Here's what Katie had to say in March 2023. I was lost and overwhelmed with my RA diagnosis. It felt overwhelming to know what to read, what to do, how to spend my energy trying to research on the internet. Room to Thrive did that for me. It's been like getting a crash course in my diagnosis along with a community who gets it. To see all the details, including the dates for the next support groups, go to the link in the show notes or bit.ly/thriveroom with a capital T and capital R. You can also just email me anytime at info@myarthritislife.net. And don't delay if you're interested, because each group is capped at 16 people or less in order to make a small, intimate group atmosphere. Thanks so much for your time, and I can't wait to get started with the next groups. And I can't wait for those of you who are interested in the self-paced option to go ahead and join that at any time. Bye-bye for now. I wanted to ask you a couple more things. One is, you know, I think I met you on Instagram, right? The bionic _RA. When and how did you kind of start your account?
So when I first got arthritis, well, when I first was diagnosed with RA, I started looking around Instagram and Twitter, and I had two accounts. The Twitter one got toxic for me, but it was just showing me. It was this is what you want to look at, this is what you're looking at, so we're going to give you more. So then when I came into Instagram, I was very, I don't look at things like, I just focus on the arthritis and moving and things like that. So I've been, my Instagram account now is 6.5 years, I think I've had it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I didn't prepare you for this question, but I thought, oh, this would be a good thing to delve into, because, you know, it is for so many people that feel isolated with their condition, social media can be a little bit of a lifeline. Like, did you find that, like, how has it been helpful for you to connect to other RA warriors, as they're called, or AS warriors?
So, you know, there's the general groups, you know, that you send messages to, or your posts out to, or you read their posts. But I also get through the DMs with people that I've known for 6 years. I have people that I ran with who were pregnant and their kids are in school now and they have AS. So it's things like that. So I keep in touch with these people through DMs as well. I have a very special group of people, and it has replaced and rebuilt a social life for me that didn't exist, that, you know, I burned to the ground after COVID. So I think my Instagram account, I know there's TikTok, I know there's all these other ones, but I get anxious sometimes if I can't post or something like that. So I don't want to multiply it times three or anything like that. I got rid of my Instagram, my Twitter account a long time ago. And it was a good thing for
me. That was a good choice. Yeah.
It was a really good thing for me.
Yeah. It's now called X. It's gotten, I stay on it because a lot of doctors are on it that I've connected to, like conferences and other health professionals. But, yeah, I think you're really wise to keep it to one. Again, do as I say, not as I do.
keeping it to one.
You know, yeah, I get the business part of it. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's a beautiful testament to, you know, the power of social media. And for those who aren't familiar, DMs stands for direct message. So it's basically a one-on-one correspondence with someone, like an email through the social media platform, or it can be a little group, you know, more than just one-on-one. You can have a little group private message group. But yeah.
I mean, it's been it's just been a really big thing for me. You know, it really has. I keep my circle very small, it's a tight circle. I share openly on my platform. Mm-hmm. I don't care, but you know, the people that I keep close with, I might share. Yeah, a little deeper stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I love your pick. I mean, I'm living on the total opposite side of the country from you. So I'm in Washington State, you're in Florida. So I'm Northwest, you're Southeast. And I just love, I know this is not the point, but I love the pictures that you share of, you know, these beautiful, you know, trees and, you know, a crocodile or alligator and, you know, all this stuff is so exotic to me.
Yeah. Alligators are like, I love, it's just part of the, you know, the reason we moved back down to Florida in the 80s was just to be around all this. And I love kayaking, love being out. Love being around alligators. Love swimming with manatees. I just, it's so special to be here.
So do you have to adapt, like, or how do you adapt if you do any of your hobbies? Like, do you have hand pain while kayaking and stuff like that?
Yes, I do. I wear a glove with a wrap. It's a weightlifting glove that I wear.
Okay.
So it increases the size of the grip, so I'm not gripping as tight.
Yep.
And it keeps my wrists.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I use those.
Awesome. Yep. That's a real, you got like an honorary occupational therapy degree, because that's probably something that an OT would tell you, but you didn't even have to go to an appointment. So
yeah. All right.
I just bought some of those weightlifting gloves actually myself.
They're great for the wrists. I mean, you know, my wrists are really bad.
Yeah, so. Wrist pain is hard. You don't realize how much you use your wrists, right? Until you hurt them.
You know, it's when a 6'4", 205-pound guy can't open a pickle jar.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful with my hands. I've had 7 surgeries. Oh, since wow. I've had RA on my hands. In the last 6 years, I've had 7 surgeries.
Oh my gosh, on hand and wrist?
Just hands to free up tendons.
Whoa.
Yeah, went after the tendons in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. So they had to open up the channels that the nerves fly through. So it wasn't down in the carpal area.
Right, it was called the intrinsic area, like the muscles that start and end within the hand versus the ones that originate further up the arm and go across the wrist. The hand is so complex. I mean, as you know, from experience, I studied it in school to be an occupational therapist, but there's no substitute for having to experience it yourself.
Well, I know all these parts, you know?
Yeah. You got the replacement part. You got the replacement models. I love that. Yeah. I love that analogy. I was just yesterday, I recorded an episode that's going to come out right before this one with a nurse practitioner who she used a car analogy as well, but she was using it for like the different variables that can help you, manage your condition. So she's like, it's like you're the car and there's these 4 wheels. There's like medication and there's like 3 other wheels of like lifestyle and mental health, you know, finding balance in your life. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but anyway, it seems to be cars are like the theme of the week this week, but it works. We're in America. We are a car centric culture. And I wanted to know if there was anything else you wanted to share. You mentioned, you know, you did the Room to Thrive self-paced course, which I often talk about the support group, and I want to make sure to make it clear that there's this pre-recorded lectures that I deliver in the self-paced course, which you can do by itself
or you can do it alongside the support group. But was there, you mentioned that, you know, learning about the orthorexia was helpful in the nutrition part. Is there anything else that you found that you want to share about your experience with that?
So I'd like to, you know, when I was first diagnosed, I found out all this stuff on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, I read Mayo Clinic, Healthline,
yep.
Cleveland Clinic. I went through all these things, Arthritis Foundation, all the different places to find information, and put it all together. And I had a pretty good idea. And then over 6 years, you know, I wasn't keeping up with it. I wasn't keeping refreshed with it. And I took the room to the Thrive piece, and it was kind of like, I knew a lot of this stuff. I had just forgotten it, and it was good to hear it again for me. And then there were many new things in it as well. So I just, yeah, and it was really good. I was actually, this is hilarious. I was installing a kitchen in someone's house part-time, a little carpentry work. And I would have it set up on the counter, and it would just play in the background while I was working, and I would listen to it. And that's how I went through the class. And I would go back and replay modules and stuff like that. So that's how I did the whole Room to Thrive piece while I was working.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's
there was so no one there. It was great. It was just perfect. Yeah.
I was going to say, oh no. So yes, yeah, someone walking into that kitchen, they're like, what are you listening to?
Nope.
Well, that's so great. And it's a funny thing to explain that, like, you, yeah, I didn't, like, with Room to Thrive, I didn't discover something that it's like proprietary. And I'm like, you can only learn it through Room to Thrive, right? It's information that is in the scientific literature that's been reported on, you know, in terms of what ways to manage your condition, you know, tools for pain and fatigue, habits like lifestyle, nutrition, sleep, stress management, exercise, and then valued activities, mental health. You know, you can piecemeal it together on your own, but what I find valuable is that, you know, there's a person, me, who's, you know, been there and is trying to present it to you kind of in a logical manner to where you don't have to do that executive functioning process of, you know, having to sift through website after website, you know, but, yeah. And like you said, we have to learn and relearn over time. You know, I'm 21 years into a RA diagnosis, and I'm constantly relearning things or remembering things that, you know, I had initially learned and then forgotten about. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that you had a good experience with it.
Yeah. And it even, you know, it's helped me more in my doctor's appointments. Because when you kind of understand more and you can speak their speak, they kind of maybe listen a little bit. We'll say differently. I won't say better. I'll say they maybe listen a little differently. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So it was, and to your point, I could not have gone out and grabbed all that stuff and put all that stuff into a funnel and brought it down to me the way it was done, like your program, Room to Thrive. I couldn't have. Took me years.
Yeah. It's time intensive and it's overwhelming to try to do it on your own, you know, and there were parts of it that even when I was putting the course together, I actually, my very first iteration of it was in May 2020. And I actually said, I'm not even going to touch nutrition in this course. Everything else I covered that's still in the course now in an updated version that I did like a major update in 2023. But in 2020, I had all the major components of like the Thrive framework of like tools for pain and fatigue, habits, relationships, that's the R, inner world, values and valued activities and executive functions. I had those all, but I said, nutrition is such an overwhelming topic. Even to me, I said, I really just recommend seeing a nutritionist or a registered dietitian. But eventually I decided, you know what, I actually can devote the time to at least helping people
get the big picture of it, I still think it's a great idea to see a registered dietitian that specializes in autoimmune conditions. But because so many people, their first question is about nutrition when it comes to, you know, non-pharmacological ways of managing it. But anyway, point being, it's overwhelming even to someone like me who's like voracious about learning about these things. It's still a lot. Yep. So thank you so much for sharing about that. And then a couple, just last few questions. You know, I'm starting to ask people this question, and it's fine if it's hard to answer, but is there anything you would do differently? Like reflecting back on your journey with, you know, AS and RA and OA, is if you were diagnosed today, would you do anything differently?
No, because I would know. You mean knowing everything I know now?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the one I would be much nicer to myself, I think, or kinder to myself, or gentler to myself. I don't know. I'm understanding.
That's huge.
I mean, I was really hard on myself. I was very hard on myself.
Did you like blame yourself somehow for having it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really common. And, you know, I always remind people when they blame themselves, children get rheumatoid arthritis. You know, they get juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which is a similar, not identical condition. You know, children who are 8 months old can get, you know, inflammatory arthritis. So it's not, they didn't obviously do anything, you know, but no. That's logic. Our logic doesn't always communicate to our emotions, right?
I mean, I wanted to know why. I just didn't. Yeah, it was really. Yeah, I just think I wouldn't be so focused on why. I would probably try to find acceptance maybe earlier. I think if I had maybe accepted that I had rheumatoid arthritis 5 years ago or 6 years ago, it would have been easier. So yes, I would have done things differently, I guess. Yes.
Yeah.
I had to think.
No, thank you. Maybe I should word the question. If you knew what you know now, then would you do something different? It's like that song, I wish that I knew what I knew now when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not a person that just believes that, you know, if someone, you know, would you do anything different? I'm pretty much, yeah, I would do a lot of things different in life. I just didn't understand it. I was trying to think of what I could do differently.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. To not get it or something. Yeah.
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 No, there's a great book I recommend people check out called Fooled by Randomness, about how a lot of things in life are random and we get fooled into thinking that we're in control. We're really not, you know? I mean, I got, you know, a random virus that probably triggered my RA along with my inherited predisposition due to family history. And like, nothing I can do about that. It happened, you know?
Yep.
Blaming myself is not, you know, but anyway, logic, I can say that to myself and my emotions believe me, but there are other times when I try to apply logic and my emotions are like, I don't care. I still feel bad.
Yeah.
That's just,
yeah. And that's good. I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand that.
And do you, here's some rapid fire questions. Do you have time to go a little over?
Yeah.
Okay. No pressure. Okay. Do you have a favorite arthritis gadget or tool in your toolbox?
So yes, I would say long-handled brushes.
Yes.
I love those. I got those from you. I saw you using long-handled brushes 3-4 years ago, maybe.
Wow,
and I started using them on pans and dishes, because I do a lot of the housework now because my wife still works. So I'm trying to pull my weight. But it makes that. Not so much a rapid fire answer. Sorry.
No, that is no. Believe me. And then the next one is like, could be a 3-hour long conversation, but I mean, what you just said about the next question is going to be best words of wisdom for newly diagnosed patients, which I'm assuming is similar to what you said before, be kind to yourself, you know, yeah, is there anything else? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think be gentle with yourself, keep your circle small. Just keep your circle small. It's okay that a lot of people are around, but
yeah,
people you trust, it shouldn't be like, I trust 3,000 people. It's like 2 or 3 people. Keep it small.
Quality over quantity, maybe?
Absolutely. For this, yeah. For this, yes.
That makes sense. This is my pop culture question, not related to arthritis at all, but I love to always hear, do you have a favorite like movie or book or show you've been watching recently?
So I think my favorite movie and book is River Runners.
Okay.
And I'm really bad with pulling names up and stuff, but the man's name is Scott and he was a kayaker, river kayaker. He kayaked these massive rivers all over the world and found out he had cancer and he got well enough and he went kayak one more big river and he passed. And that to me was an inspiration that just pulls me every day to just, let's go one more step.
Wow. I love that. I love memoirs of inspirational people.
Yeah. River Runners. Loved it.
Okay. I'm going to check that one out. Do you have a favorite mantra or inspirational saying? It's okay if you don't.
I do. Okay. I actually do. And it's simplicity. That's just my word. It's, mm-hmm. I could take you outside and show you 4 sides.
Yeah.
You have it simple. You know, it's just, it's not complicated. So for me, simplicity is a real good thing. I can't do complicated anymore.
Oh, geez. Wow. I'm inspired by that. Cause I really need to, that resonates as something aspirational for me. It's not what I'm currently doing. And what is something that has been bringing you joy lately?
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been struggling.
Yeah.
You know, my routine. I can say there's a joy in that because it's comforting and there's a lot going on right now that's out of control. And so my routine, I think, yeah, that gives me joy. I get up and I, yeah.
What are the things in your daily routine?
So daily I get up, I, you know, have my healthy shake in the morning and then I'm off to the gym and it's usually I'm there for 2.5 hours.
Whoa. And,
yeah. Every day.
That's amazing. Sorry. I'm like, whoa.
Every day.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I love to work out and it's, you know, I'll be kayaking soon. I'm kind of upset. I mentioned earlier that I won't be able to go in the water. I was planning to do some cave diving, and I won't be able to make the dive that I wanted to make.
Hopefully.
Because I can't get wet. So,
yeah, I'm so sorry. That's
But I still do, you know, I still do really hard things. I still do really, and that's important. Mm-hmm. I hurt myself. I get hurt, but I still do hard things.
Yeah. I mean, it's about choosing what you value in life, you know, and sounds like you definitely value being very active and, you know, doing those things that you love, like the kayaking and being in nature. Last one, what does it mean to you to live a good life and thrive with rheumatic disease?
So to me, it means yes. It means being able to do things. And I think to be able to go to like Disney with my family when they want to go, to be able to to go running with my young nieces and nephews, take them kayaking, take them swimming to see manatee, to do those things and still be a really active funkel. I'm a funkel. And so that to me is important because I just want them to remember, you know, Uncle Ray as he didn't have arthritis. Uncle Ray was like, no way. He just like fired till the end. Kind of the way I want it to go, you know?
That's beautiful. And if for those listening who don't know, funkel means fun uncle, just FYI. In case you haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's such a great note to end on. Where can people find you online?
So I'm on Instagram, and it's Bionic RA. I think a hyphen underneath it.
Or it's underscore, yeah. Bionic.
Underscore, yeah.
Underscore RA.
Yeah, Bionic hyphen underscore RA.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you so much. I really think this episode going to resonate with a lot of people, and I can't wait to share it. And those listening, you can find a full episode show notes and a transcript and a video of this conversation on the Arthritis Life podcast, or the videos on also the YouTube, on the Arthritis Life website, www.myarthritislife.net, or my YouTube channel, which you could just search Arthritis Life and it comes up. So thank you so much, Ray. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Take
Bye
care.
Right now. You too. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Arthritis Life podcast. This episode is brought to you by Room to Thrive, an educational program I created from scratch to help you go from overwhelmed to confident, supported, and connected in a matter of weeks. You can go through the pre-recorded course on your own, or you can take the course along with a support group. Learn more at the link in my show notes, or you can always go to www.myarthritislife.net. And if you like this podcast, I would be so honored if you took the time to rate and review it. I also encourage you to share it with anyone you know who might benefit from it. I also wanted to remind you that you can find full transcripts, videos, and detailed show notes with hyperlinks for each episode on my website, www.myarthritislife.net. If you have any ideas for future episodes, or if you want to share your story or wisdom on the podcast, just shoot me an email at info@myarthritislife.net. I can't wait to hear from you. Bye.
Bye.